Shaughnessy dance on the 26th. Miss Murphy, dignified by the title of local dressmaker, although by no means a follower of fashion set by people like Yves Saint Laurent and Pierre Balmain, of whom she had certainly never heard, didn't think there was enough material for a full-length evening dress. And what could be nicer or more useful than something full-skirted and short that could be worn for afternoon parties later on? It would also do for the garden party at Mount Osborne, for instance, and the September fete, and with a little red velvet jacket would even do beautifully for Christmas. Kathy, who knew that Eileen had set her heart on yards of chiffon and a silver lamé jacket, could not imagine her looking forward to Christmas when it was as yet only early April. And although the garden party at Mount Osborne had been the high spot of their lives since childhood, it was the O'Shaughnessy dance that was preoccupying her at the present time, to the exclusion of practically everything else. And when she learned of the shortage of material, she would simply fly into a rage. One of her tempestuous rages that shook the walls of Little Carrig and caused the Irish half of her to ignite, and the sight of her blazing blue eyes like stars on a frosty night and tossing mane of golden hair would so upset their mother that in all probability she would rush her off to Dublin and buy her something straight out of one of the most exclusive little establishments devoted to haute couture. For that was the way Eileen, the beauty of the family, got things done, or rather, achieved things. Mrs. Sheridan could never resist her in any of her moods, and since it was Mrs. Sheridan who handled the purse strings nowadays, it was wise of Eileen to be temperamental sometimes. Kathy sighed as she bumped over a familiar mound in the deplorably bad surface of the road, and then turned in at the drive of Little Carrig. She knew that she herself would be wearing her old pink on the night of the 26th, and it didn't trouble her in the least. Not because she wasn't dress-conscious and hadn't a certain amount of pride in her appearance, but because there wasn't much point in deriding the pink dress. To have done so would have been the equivalent of finding fault openly with Little Carrig, objecting to its faded stucco and the plantains on the front lawn, which nobody ever did anything about, with the result that they grew worse and worse, and now entirely overlaid the once prized Cumberland turf. She had to live in Little Carrig, and in a way she was very fond of it, just as her father was fond of the plantains. He said that the lawn would look bare without them. She expected to hear Bride playing the piano as she skimmed like a bird up the drive. Bride was the eldest of the three sisters, and although she was not particularly good at piano playing, it was the only thing that afforded her any diversion, since she had had to cut short her modelling career in London and return home to recuperate after a bad bout of influenza that had ended in pneumonia. She was languid and wan and beautiful, although not, of course, as beautiful as Eileen, and expecting to marry well one of these days. In fact, very well. For Eileen, everyone confidently looked forward to a millionaire to restore the family fortunes. Kathy was the only one of Patience Sheridan's daughters who had escaped dazzling good looks, but her godmother, Lady Fitzosborne, once said that the pixies were out en masse at the time of her birth, and they gave her her flyaway eyebrows and dew-washed complexion. In fact, Lady Fitzosborne insisted that they bathed her in dew and bestowed upon her a look of perpetual springtime that would last her right through life until her hair turned as white as Lady Fitzosborne's own. When neither a Chopin waltz nor something more modern and in a livelier tempo floated out to greet her as she propped her bicycle near the open drawing-room window, Kathy felt surprised, but nothing more. And instead of entering by way of the eternally open front door, she slipped round an angle of the house to her father's study, where she found him snoozing comfortably in his favourite armchair. He opened an eye and goggled at her as she dropped a package of tobacco on his knee, and then sat up and chuckled and approved her guile.
"Doesn't do to let your mother know everything that goes on in this house, eh?" he said. "Nor misbegotten doctors either. All that talk about tobacco choking up the lungs is just blarney and eyewash. Mine'll stay as sound as a bell until Gabriel blows his horn. The blessed St. Patrick'll see to that."
Kathy sat down on the arm of his chair and ruffled his hair. "You know very well you've had a wretched little cough all winter," she reminded him. "I feel like a conspirator pandering to your weakness when I go shopping for you without anyone."